The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday. Wednesday, April 26th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today as I have an interesting dialogue. Mind you, I'm hoping that John Pinder still calls in today because I remember we engaged him yesterday and he said, hey, I might call in. And so I want to give him the opportunity to ask one or two questions still. However, today's show, I continue the theme on whether the Bahamas has a rape culture. And in order to explore that, to hash that out, I want to still delve into several pronouncements, several quotes that have engaged it in recent times, right? I also want to engage a question that Aaron Green had asked two shows ago. And let me see if I can get the right wording. Whether it's okay to, or what's worse? Let me make sure. What is worse, right? A man should not have to rape his wife. Let me say that again. A man should not have the need to rape his wife versus a man should not rape his wife. I'm putting that question out again to see if we can see what the difference is. Is there a difference or is it the same thing? I wanted to also explore the commentary that the Member of Parliament for Killarney raised about whistles. It's a quip that he used. And versus the Minister of National Security, Wayne Monroe, harsh line in response. And I wanted to know, was it equal? Was it a flippancy in the Member of Parliament comment? Or was there an irony and flippancy in the Minister of National Security's comment? But I'll start from there. And again, I have Erin Green joining me. And I'm having her come in as an advocate and not necessarily as a co-talk show host because I'm going to be putting questions to her. And this theme for the day is, why are Bahamian men so scared, so concerned about this marital rape bill? I'm trying to get that. And is there really a concern? Then I'm going to push to the advocates, those persons who are pushing for it, to appreciate the concern for men, Bahamian men, and try to accommodate, and as we move forward to push this bill, that we can consider their concerns as we move forward. So that's the theme. But let's start off with this, Erin. And welcome, by the way, Erin.
Morning, thank you.
Yes, advocate, human rights advocate, and I was speaking in broad terms. Recently, Hubert Minnis made a remark in the... And you have that quote?
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Even good. I can let you even read that for me. But let me just pre-warn. He made a quote, and I think his goal was to... make fun of, reference a old suggestion of the former prime minister, I mean the current prime minister.
When he was in opposition.
It back then, I remember I was alarmed by the opposition leader saying, what does that make? But I understood why he made it, because it needed to be referenced to say as you remember it. However, the response by the Minister of National Security left me feeling some type of way. And I wanted to know if the listening audience felt it too. All right, and I'm going to explain that. But Erin has the direct quote, and hey, I can let her read that into the record so we can analyze it and see if I am wrong. Go ahead, Erin, and welcome again.
Yeah, morning. Thank you. Monroe, the article is called Monroe Calls Minister's Comment About a Rape Whistle, quote, distasteful and not amusing. That's the Nassau Tribune. That was in yesterday's paper, right? Okay. Monroe calls Minister's comment about a rape whistle distasteful and not amusing. It reads, telling the women parliamentarians he got each of them a whistle. Minister alluded to his successor's comments in 2020 about how the government should provide women and children with complimentary whistles, right? Davis was roundly mocked for the contribution, for the recommendation, even though experts accept whistles as a tool to prevent sexual assaults, right? So there is research, there's studies conducted to show that this is an effective tool in preventing them. And here's the quote. Dr. Minister said he was concerned by the violence in the country. He asked, how many whistles has the Prime Minister given to our females to deter criminals, Madam Speaker? According to the Prime Minister's statement, government should provide women with whistles to help deter crime. How many females have gotten their whistles? Madam Speaker, I say if these questions are not answered in a timely manner, then I may be forced to release information in my position. That's what the article said. I think he meant possession. They meant possession, right? Quote goes on. It said, the story says, this is contribution. He took out a whistle and told the women parliamentarians he brought a whistle for each of them. And he said, I want to help the Prime Minister. I brought a gift for the women in this parliament. All the women. Madam Speaker, I'll start with you. The Prime Minister said that in order to deter crime, he recommended government should provide women with a whistle to blow to deter crime. Madam Speaker, I have everybody's whistle to ensure that every female adheres to what the Prime Minister wants them to do.
And we'll pause right there. I assume that's theatrics, right? But I understood the intent of the Member of Parliament for Killarney. And I'm not sure if you agree with me, right? I believe there's a need to hold our leaders to account for past statements, past initiatives, past decisions that they have made. Mm-hmm. As the leader of the opposition, Philip Davis recommended that each person, each woman, supposed to get a whistle, and that he brought in evidence that this is a deterrent. Mm-hmm. At that time, I said, that's not a deterrent for our culture. Because whistle is a thing for party and merriment. So it wouldn't work here. Because if I hear a whistle, like I said, man, who blow a pipe a day? And I assume drums will follow. That's just me.
You don't think whistle Junkanoo Bear? I gotta be there?
What?
I hear whistles.
Uh-huh.
I think Junkanoo.
Yeah.
There must be bear. I must be there. I'm going to find out where this whistle is. That's like seeing a back trunk open. When I see a back trunk open, I know some delicious, magical, old bear-ish food inside there that's going to hook me.
Exactly. Yes. But it just got my point. So I understand the critique. I understand the critique, and I understand the nature of what Hubert Minnis intended, right? I even understand why he even brought out the whistles out. And so I can give each one you all, because it was a goading and it was a call of hypocrisy of the now prime minister of not following through. He's not committed in terms of, and this is me, and forgive me for the brash words, not committed to protecting women. Mm-hmm. Because if he was, initiatives would have been put in place, and especially during this time where it seems as if Bahamian women are under attack. That is not happening, and we need to realize, and women need to call our leaders out. You said he's going to protect us. You, in opposition, you said you had ideas, and to this date, it hasn't been brought forth. But then there was a response. There was a response by the Minister of National Security, right? And I think he's trying to get points,
right? And I felt offended. And I'm going to give my reason why I felt offended.
By Minnesota or by Monroe?
By Monroe. I can tell you why I felt offended. I'm going to tell you, but I want you, do you have the response by Monroe to read there? I'm not sure if you got that for the record.
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to read that. And I can tell you why I feel offended. And I want to know how you felt for either commentary as an advocate, a woman's advocate, right? And how maybe, how women should feel. And then, again, know how women in the House of Assembly should feel and their response, a supported response. I want to go through all of that.
All right. So we go down to the article where it says, during his contribution, Mr. Monroe chastised the former Prime Minister. Kalani, when he was here, told a poor joke about rape victims of all things and that he has brought whistles now, he said. When they were in power, he should have recruited policemen. He should have bought police cars, right? St. Anne's MP Adrian White tried to get Mr. Monroe's comments struck from the record, insisting Dr. Minnis never joked about rape. Mr. Monroe replied, let me be quite full in what Kalani said because it was and is distasteful. He added, Madam Speaker, you know I said to one of my colleagues on this side, I've really had enough of this self-righteousness of the people on the opposite side. The member for Kalani raised an article that related to rape victims and the use of whistles to deter rape. That is what he did in this place. We told him when he first said it that it wasn't in good taste. And in the end, in laughter, he talked about having a whistle for you and having a whistle for Elizabeth. It was in poor taste. It amazed me that it was said by a man who had the ability to buy police vehicles and not let us have to buy 100 to recruit police officers so that we're not recruiting 2 and 2.5 squads per year. That man has the gall to come in here and talk about how he's going to give you a whistle. Yes, St. Anne's, it's not funny, it's not amusing, and it really ought never to have been said.
And this is where I come in.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron, we had a show, a joint show, where I called for the resignation of the Minister of National Security. You remember when I called for the Minister of National Security?
Yeah, because...
I want you to conjure up what he said, what he did to children, Bahamian children, by what he said, right? And when he comes with this flippancy that someone else is doing something anti-woman and said, wait, sorry, forgive me. Good gentleman,
mm-hmm.
What you said about a child can give consent for sex was so offensive. See, I'm spitting all over you, Aaron. Sorry. Forgive me for that. I have to spray the whole mic after this.
Mm-hmm.
Was so offensive, Aaron. He should not be a member of Parliament at all.
Man, listen.
He definitely should resign as Minister of National Security. So for him to have the audacity now to come out and say that member of Parliament is minimizing rape when children in the Bahamas get molested. When men is jacking out their guts.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And he's saying, don't, it's so flippancy, right?
Yeah.
And have audacity come into our honorable House of Assembly and to talk idle
foolishness. Because it gets.
And the women inside it didn't say nothing. They say, hey, let me say this. But for you, you need to sit small. You don't talk about women issues no more. You don't talk about children's issues no more.
Because
you're offensive to womanhood.
You are not allowed. I would say that you are not allowed anymore. I also call for the minister's resignation. And I mean, because what does 100 cars do? What does 100 cars do for the policy to eradicate violence against women and rape generally? What does 2.5 squads per year do if you don't put the resources in to train these officers, but more importantly, B, this is the most important part, shift the culture within the force to make it more likely that convictions will happen. Because it's not the name of the act that's preventing convictions from happening. It's that a large portion of your officers don't believe the acts that they are authorized to police are actually crimes. They don't believe that these things warrant their attention. They don't believe that they should be spending their energies focused on these issues. And we're going to have to say it. One of the biggest running jokes through the country is, who are the waste boyfriends? And if they aren't all uniformed forces, then it ain't none. Then the waste boyfriend is a woman. That's the biggest joke. So I am with you. There are multiple reasons. Hold on. It gets better.
But let me inject.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Aaron, you remember when a number of religious leaders came forward, also echoing our concern about the Minister of National Security, saying that he sounds like a defense lawyer, that he's taken up seemingly for the criminals, and not understanding that we are hurting out here. We are paranoid and concerned that women are concerned to walk the streets. And when you hear people say, don't worry, crime is down, and they put rape is up, right? And then when he comes up and say these, and nobody's saying a word, right? He does not have the right to speak anymore.
Listen, due to forces beyond my control yesterday, I shifted the nature of the presentation I wanted to make. Here is something, though, that I want to add to my list of reasons why Wayne Monroe should resign forthwith. I mean, not resign forthwith. He should train a replacement first in parts of the job, not all, but he should do that first. Here's an article from yesterday's Tribune. Monroe, marital rape was, quote, not on agenda, close quotes. It's 25th of April, yesterday in the Nassau Tribune.
Ain't urgent. That's right. That's what he said. Is marital rape is not urgent.
It's better than that.
It's not urgent?
No, because I didn't hear him say it wasn't urgent, you know.
What he said?
What he said was, why are we talking about it if it wasn't in the manifesto for change? He said, I didn't campaign on it. And what's implied is I don't really want to be talking about it. That's what's implied. I implied that. I am in the implication business.
I hear the implication.
But let me read. I don't see any point on stating an opinion on something that's not on the legislative agenda. And the Prime Minister's spouse has already said that we need to have widespread consultation. Dear, I'm going to say, Minister of National Security. It don't matter if it's on the legislative agenda. It's on your agenda, because your agenda is to concern yourself about the experiences of Bahamian citizens when it comes to crime. People are being molested. What we are saying is, are people who are being molested within the confines of their marriage, are they deserved, right? Do they deserve to have that act recognized as a crime? That's your job, sir. You keep telling us what your job isn't. You keep telling us what you're not prepared to do. Why you didn't tell us that when you were on the election trail? Why you didn't pronounce it to everybody in the country? And no, we don't want your opinion. We want the opinion of your constituents from your perspective as an MP. See, it ain't your opinion at all. What is the opinion of your constituents on the matter? And B, what is your position and as a minister responsible for policy and the enforcement of policy? It has nothing to do with your personal opinion.
Aaron, I want you to highlight something again.
Yeah.
Because you just said it, and I think it went over our heads.
Yeah.
First of all, I want to ask you, what is the job of a member of parliament? Just generally.
To represent their constituents, to bring their needs to the House of Assembly so that they can be considered law and policy.
And you conclude with the creation of law and policy. Just now you read that the Minister of National Security made a commentary about widespread consultation.
Yeah.
Who did he said announced the need for widespread consultation?
The Office of the Spouse.
You voted for her?
No.
You mean you voted for the Office of the Spouse?
No. I didn't even vote whether we were going to create that office or not. I didn't even have a vote on that, and I think that's a constitutional thing, because the Constitution creates offices. And that's why I talk so much about this presumption of the office of the deputy prime minister, because that doesn't exist either. Yet we could find money to fund those offices and all of the accoutrements, but we can't find money to put toilet paper in the hospital or signs on parks to say little children shouldn't play there.
Aaron, I ain't gonna let you escape. The good German, the minister,
mm-hmm.
who has a whole portfolio,
mm-hmm.
the member of parliament,
mm-hmm.
who has a whole portfolio what to do,
mm-hmm.
said who and what is supposed to do what?
He said that we need widespread consultation. The government should engage in widespread consultation. Anyway, that's even if they pick it up.
But who he said is promoting it?
The office of the spouse.
Not a member of parliament?
No.
Not a minister?
No.
And y'all still don't say that the gentleman needs to resign? Like, you ain't see the problem?
Oh, no, I see the problem.
You see the problem?
I've been calling for him to resign for a hot minute.
God have mercy on me, man.
It ain't just you. It's several of us. It's only four, but I mean, I presume the other two may be
man,
in
you
like
head. Him. This is no personal thing. This is talking about governance and good governance.
And understanding your role and function in governance.
The good German don't understand what
but
his job
Mr. Newry, I won't talk, but I see we have a call.
Let the caller come through. Because I get vexed, though. I vexed her at it, man. No, blouse and skirts, man. We happen inside the Bahamas, man. We decent people, you know. I come from decent people.
Because, listen, we're talking about an issue that most people say, like, you know, everybody say, well, these, we don't know what you, you know, when we talk about marital rape, we say, okay, these are adults. You don't have to get married, da-da-da-da. We're talking about the breadth of it. Children, how could a seven-year-old consent?
I say, resign, get fired.
See, we could not, listen, I see the call, I can't necessarily.
Let's go to the caller, man. Let's go to the caller. Producer, patch the caller through for me, please. Go ahead, caller, how are you doing today?
Aaron and CCA, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
You know, conversation as the days go on is getting better and better, and I congratulate both of you for engaging in some of these very provocative topics that many of us under the trees and the barbershop and so on and so forth are having. And it's so important to know what the voices of the people are. You know, this is why one of the reasons why we said you talk about majority rule and democracy in this country. You know, there's these two big question marks. Aaron, your commentary this morning, at least within the past 5 minutes, was very spot on. You know, we have these persons in these various created positions seem to be speaking a majority of vehemence when I thought in a democracy, it is the voice of the people that should our parliamentarians should really be listening to. And in the past days, since a few decades ago, there was a time when the MP would stand up in parliament and said, I rise on behalf of my constituents. Mm-hmm. That does not happen in parliament anymore because basically, to be honest, I don't think the majority of them actually go to their constituents to actually hear their concerns on the various topics that confront us as a people. And I think that's a travesty when it comes down to their purpose of why they are actually there in parliament. You know,
just one second. I'm not contradicting. I just want to make this point. That's why I hound this point that the politicians are changing the political culture, they're changing the job descriptor, and they're telling us that it's ridiculous for us to even assume that we would have an opportunity to speak to them over the 5 years. Go on.
And you're absolutely correct. You know, some time ago, I think it was about 2 years ago, I made a suggestion or a recommendation, even though it may not be part of the parliament procedure, you know, to have a day when the people can come into parliament and actually advance 30 parliamentarians sitting in parliament because that's one of the very few times when they all congregate at one time. We can't catch them all in one place at one time. So why is it that we cannot create a time when the people can actually address them directly, whether it be televised on live on TV or not?
Mm-hmm.
It is the people's parliament. They're there to do the people's work. You know, we're tired of, for instance, I am. I'm sick and tired of hearing their personal rhetoric. I'm sick and tired of hearing them misrepresenting the people when they have not consulted the people at all. And I think most of the things now that we are discussing should go to a general referendum for the people's voices really to be heard so that the world at large can understand that we are a set of people, we are standing on a few values and principles that we truly believe in, and these are the things that we desire our government to do our bidding and on our behalf. That does not happen, Aaron. And in closing, I'm going to say this much. Democracy in this country, seriously, is under attack because the democracy, the true democracy of a people. These persons are not listening to the majority of people. The only time majority rule in this country is joining, and that's it. The rest of our voices weakened.
And even that is...
Until the cows come home, and these guys would not listen to the majority of people that are speaking these things. And this matter of situation, I close on this note. You know, I believe that because this is such a controversial subject and topic, being pushed by the perception of it is by a certain elitist set of people, and I'm only telling you the perception, all right? We need to have these people be formally addressed by the public, put the hard questions to them, let them answer the questions, and at the end of the day, let the people's will, whatever the people decide that the direction they want to go in, that is the direction we're going to go in. We could quash all of this one time, once and for all. Thank you for taking my call, Larry.
I want to. I see the phones are light up, and even though I have a text, so let me let one of these phone calls.
I got the text. Yes. I'm not going to lose it.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Listen, I am delighted in the conversation you're having today. That is why it is so important that you always ask yourself: Is the government of the Bahamas acting? What is the purpose of the representative of the House of Assembly? And I'm sure Ms. Green brought up some very, very good points. We have to know the quality of the people you send there in the first place. Then we don't have to go through all this crap, all this nonsense, all this foolishness about a 7-year-old child could give consent. Give me a break, man. This is the kind of nonsense and foolishness we've been going through for 50 long years since we became an independent nation. And you haven't seen anything yet. You just wait until some revealing information is put out there to the general public of this country to tell you how the government of the Bahamas has done some terrible things to the Bahamian people. It is going to be shocking. What the gentleman has said about people having access to parliamentarians at any given time in the House of Assembly, that may be a good suggestion. All I'm saying is that we have some very serious issues that are affecting this country, and the Bahamian people have to rise up and do something. I always quoted Article 24.1 of your Constitution. That very last phrase, which we've overlooked for more than 50 years in the Constitution, which we as the Bahamian people have ignored, although they tell me they didn't understand it, didn't know it. It's time to stop not knowing now, and we have to start knowing so we could be in a position to be well organized, and then 3, to take action. Thank you, Ms. Green.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's go to this last caller here. Pastor caller through there. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, man. This is John Vinder. I've been trying to get on this Zoom thing. I'm not able to get on. I don't know if Aaron is still trying to reach me.
Yes, sir.
I just commit to trying to be on the show.
Yes. What I'm going to do, John, is I'm going to engage you. I'm going to let Aaron read this text, and so we can give you these 15 minutes, because I know we did agree that we will entertain you for a minute.
And maybe we go to a break, close off this end of the show, read the text, respond, close off the end of the show. You hold the line, Mr. Pinder, and let's get into the rest of this conversation.
Yes. All right. I want this to be read. So hold 1 minute for me.
All right. Now I'm reading a text that came in this morning. Good morning. Earlier this week or late last week, Mr. Newry chastised Johnson about speaking without facts and to not bring fictional numbers into a national discussion. Can you, Mr. Newry or Ms. Green, give us the numbers on marital rape in the past 3 years, please?
At this present time, Aaron, can a husband rape his wife?
The law will not recognize husband raping his wife. They're not going to look at it as a crime. They're going to say that's not a crime. It's unfortunate it happened, maybe, but it's not a crime. There's nothing the police could do about it.
So is there any statistics?
There's no documented statistics on marital rape in the country because marital rape is not an offense. Because it's not an offense, it's not being officially documented anywhere.
Mind you, we explained this before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure this texter heard the explanation before.
Mm-hmm.
Because the law does not exist, there is no statistics audit because there's nothing to record.
Yeah.
Right? But I know they can text back again, and as this conversation conclude and go on and on again, they could try and make this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, my mother, May, used to say, when you're trying to do good, the devil always appear.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, that's the devil. But I regress right now. Just read me one more text so we can go back to John Finder.
All right, another text. Great, as usual. I did not know Minnis had a sense of humor. Even though it's a serious matter, y'all have to admit it was funny. It wasn't funny, right? Here's what the problem is with this mechanism of humor. It turns out that rape whistles actually are an effective tool in deterring and preventing sexual assault. It turns out that they are.
I agree with you, Aaron. Yeah. The issue is, will it work here? In our culture, there are things inside the United States that works. And there are things inside the Bahamas that works.
Mm-hmm.
But when you remove it from our context, our social dynamics, and put it in their social dynamics and vice versa, it will not work. We know what whistles is for in the Bahamas. We are a whistle society.
It's for junkanoo.
It's for junkanoo. If I hear a woman, I'm not saying a woman, whoever the person is blowing a whistle, and I can say, what in the junkanoo gods is this woman playing music for? Mind you, I understand.
Well, okay, one quick text, only because they sent it in my hour and now they've resent it in your hour. Good morning. I love your show. I have a question. Should everyone in the Bahamas have rights to live, love, learn, be safe, and access to human and equal rights? And the list goes on. Am I right? Listen, the list goes on. There are always restrictions, right? Like, I'm going to say, yes, everybody has the right to be in relationship with who they choose. However, you have to be of the age of consent to make that decision. The other person also has to consent to being in the relationship with you, and they get the right to consent the nature of the relationship. The text goes on. My comment is, why make me feel like my rights are being infringed with certain agendas that certain people pushing? Heard your guest user remark, traumatic. I had a traumatic experience with a trans man to have nightmares to this day. Should I lead a rights movement towards this kind of behavior that manipulate people and our children? Let me stop here, right here. Let me show you all something, particularly the Christians. Your book, the Bible, sets out all the rules you need to protect yourself in this wicked Babylon system, right? And if you were following the tenets of your book and your faith, if you are Anglican, it's scripture, doctrine, and tradition, right? That's the three things. If you are Anglican and you follow in these three things, you would forever be safe, sir. Okay? You don't engage in sex or sexual intimacy with somebody. And when I say sexual intimacy, I mean flirting. I mean little winky-winky eye.
That text touched him.
Kissing. You don't engage in none of those things until you are betrothed and married. If you was following the tenets of your faith, you never would have get catching the dance not knowing what you was doing. And that goes for all of the men out there who are like, I can't believe y'all trying to arrest me because she was in the club at 15. Listen. Why are you having sex with people that you've only met in a club one time in the dark while you were drinking and they were drinking too? I feel your pain and your panic because you panic because you're concerned. The Bible, your faith, and your church have all the tools you need to protect yourself, sir.
Any more text before we transition and go to the break?
Two more texts just came in. So if there are no statistics, what is the need for the law basis on? Why is there a need?
See a table of the devil?
Dear texter, I'm going to pretend like you didn't say that. Because if you come to the documentary tonight, you will hear the lived experiences of Bane, some of which who have experienced marital rape themselves. Come out and listen. Don't be facetious, though. You remember when I pressed the button yesterday? You can't press a button on a text. In addition to Wayne Monroe, what other members of Parliament are you asking for to resign? I said it yesterday. You know, I ain't gonna say it. I mean, Wayne Monroe, definitely. And then there's obviously someone whose name is not named. And how can I call their name if their name is not named?
An unnamed one.
Right. And maybe there are people who won't call the name that I want to call their name, but I ain't gonna call their name.
I say anyone who get in charge. You get in charge before the courts, you might have to resign.
I mean, I just... In the Westminster system, maybe not. But in the Westminster system, I think that's what's required. Anyway, Mr. Anyway. Pinder.
Yes, yes. Okay. Producer, let's go to a commercial break and we come back in with John Pinder so we can engage him.
Yeah. Thank you for holding the line, Mr. Pinder.
After a hurricane or storm, get the Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide. The guide will tell you where to purchase building and cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and much more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches and after it departs. Take advantage of this 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300. 302-2300, or call your account executive. Will you be prepared?
My mommy made sure that I was vaccinated because she loves me.
Getting our precious little ones vaccinated protects them from so many diseases like polio, measles, and whooping cough. Vaccines are safe and effective. Immunizations can prevent illnesses and even death.
As we celebrate our 50th year of independence, let's move forward to protecting ourselves and each other from vaccine-preventable diseases. Upward to achieving the highest vaccination rates in the region, and onward to a safer, healthier Bahamas. We can achieve this together. In New Providence, visit Ann's Town Clinic, Flamingo Gardens Clinic, Elizabeth Estate Clinic, or if you're in the Family Island Clinic, visit any of your routine vaccination clinics for vaccines. COVID-19 vaccines are also available.
This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and USAID.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio. Cecil Newry, we have a message for you today. This Friday and Saturday, April the 28th and 29th, the Central Bank will be hosting a financial literacy fair and digital expo at Fusion Superplex on Gladstone Road. Learn more about investments, savings, insurance, digital payment solutions, and more. Up to $50,000 in sand dollars will be given away. You can use your sand dollars anywhere sand dollar is accepted. This includes the Red Cross Fair that's being held this Saturday and Sunday at Arawaki. The first 600 sand dollar wallet holders at the fair will receive 50% off adult admission and free admission for kids. Again, April the 28th and 29th, Central Bank Financial Literacy Fair and Digital Expo at Fusion Superplex on Gladstone Road and Red Cross Fair Saturday and Sunday at Arawaki. Have a great weekend, Bahamas.
Yes. So let's bring in John Pinder. And let me find out what he's doing now. Because I know that he recently he's running for Member of Parliament in Fox Hill. You know, he had demit his position as union head. So I want to know, I have an update so the general public understand what he's doing at this present time. John Pinder, are you there?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm still here.
So I just want a general update on what are you doing at this present time. Like last time, you was director of Labour. Right. I know you're no longer that. So what are you doing now?
So let me first apologize. I did accept an invitation late last night. As a matter of fact, this morning when I saw it, forgetting that we had already had some approval from some of the government agencies to visit the membership. So I do apologize, but I'm in my car. I tried to get on Zoom, but I wasn't able to. Presently, I am the general manager of Elite Security Services Agency.
Elite Security Agency?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And that's, I assume that's your own business and you're just promoting that?
No, that's not. That's not. I'm only the general manager.
But okay. I appreciate the vibe. Yeah.
So let's talk labor and the unionism in the Bahamas, right? There are some people who say, man, the union, the movement itself is dead. That, in fact, there is only one union in the Bahamas that is somewhat doing a adequate job. And someone would go as far as I say that's the teachers' union. I want to give want you to give your overview on unions in general. Or is the union effort in jeopardy? should union leaders and union members be concerned?
From where I sit and looking at the landscape, yes, I think union is a bit in trouble. They're losing a bit of its relevance. And yes, you could say those unions that have one craft, like the teachers union, nurses union, that's only one craft. They always have an easier time than the general public service would have. For example, general public service have a variety of persons that falls under its umbrella. It's bargaining unit. And if something is going wrong, let's say in the accounts area, nothing is going wrong with the maintenance staff in another area, rather than them joining forces to resolve a problem, they will actually not participate because they don't affect them. But if you're one teacher, you're all teachers. If you're one nation, you're all nations.
Mm-hmm.
So those unions will always appear to be more effective than the general public service or a union that has more than one craft on the bargaining unit.
Absolutely.
But yes, to answer you directly, I really feel as though too many of the very good trade unionists have other jobs, both with the government as consultants and other areas of organizations, as human resource directors or something like that. So the unions have been losing a lot of it. Resources.
Let me ask you a quick question. You are campaigning essentially to for leadership in the BPSU again, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Moving forward, how do unions become more sustainable, right? Without relying on dues alone, how do unions create the infrastructure to retain the talent and the skill that they have developed within the union?
So, last meeting I represented the government, when I was director of labor, was at the OAS in Chile.
Mm-hmm.
And they spoke about the various professions that will last for the next 20 years or so, like decades or two.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the orange economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, in years gone by, the public service used to put on this talent show as a fundraiser. I believe we have to do more as an organization to tap into what is the trend of profession, or in this case, the orange economy speaks to entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
We have to use our skills to help raise revenue rather than just depending on the government. But one of the weaknesses of public service, which is the first thing on my agenda after being elected president, is to go after agency stuff. Agency staff speak to those persons who benefit from the bargaining unit. Right now, the unions in financial stress, simply because its membership is small, but its bargaining unit is large. It mm-hmm. represents about 15,000 people, but only about 4,000 people paying dues.
Okay.
Those other 11,000 or so mm-hmm. are not paying dues because they're benefiting.
Okay.
The union is using its resources by training its officers and shop stewards. They'll do various administration costs to pay the staff and all the rest of that. And those persons are benefiting without paying anything. That's going to be the first thing on our agenda when we are elected in the next union election.
Because I'm looking at what we've seen unfold with the taxi cab union, right? And I think, okay, I'm concerned about what it was that they were doing, but I appreciate the attempt, right? Like I see that they saw a need, and they were trying to figure out how to support the needs of their retired members and how to support the needs of their existing members, right? And the needs of the union itself. But we can't be creating sort of employment and rental schemes, right? Where retired drivers essentially lease their plate to the union, and some retired drivers lease their vehicles to the union, and then the union hires somebody to drive a car with a plate attached. That I can see the need and the ingenuity, but how do we create sustainable income deriving or generating mechanisms that unions can use, right? Like, can a union become a for-purpose, which is a nonprofit that produces money to run the nonprofit? Can unions become for-purpose entities that engage in some form of business. Like, for instance, Cassius Stort produces feminine hygiene protection products in the Dominican Republic. Could the union then have him to bring in those things and sell them without the duty and VAT attached to them, right? So the union gets a mechanism to support itself, and then they are supporting a major constituency of the Bahamas. You're supporting over 50% of the population, right? Is that a mechanism that unions have explored? Because you got to figure out how to pay for yourself.
The last administration we had, when I was the leader, what we did was we had actually partnership with a number of large businesses for discounts for our members as a way to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we were planning on trying to take the space that we had on Wolf Road and tell we could buy food in bulk and sell to the members at a very low, just a couple overhead rather than trying to sell for profit.
Right.
Maybe that was one way of which we could help sustain our members.
Yeah.
One of the things we will do once we are elected, we will appoint an investment committee. That's a part of our agenda.
Okay.
To look at the assets that the union has and see how best it can get revenues from it. You got to find a new source of revenue other than just depending on the membership dues. I agree we have to invest in more effectively to gain some sort of profit. But right now the union is operating in the red. And so first thing I do is get it out of the red.
Right, absolutely. And I'm glad that you informed me and the general public yesterday about the, you know, some of the dynamics of the union space, that union leaders don't get pensions. It's just not in the plan. So I really appreciate the explanation that you gave yesterday. The BPSU then is, I imagine, sort of special in that sense. How do we protect this particular union and other unions from political interference, right? Knowing and understanding the relationship obtained between union leadership and government actors.
I think it's time for union leaders, especially those who are part of the public service, to understand the importance of partnershiping with the government. You can't use the government as an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
We need the government to accept us as a partner. We need to accept the government as a partner in the best interest of our country and in the best interest of our membership.
Okay.
I think that's the route we have to take. We have to look at them as a partner, not an enemy. But you have to educate your membership to that. That, listen, the government ain't your enemy. Government's your employee. We can do as best we can. We get as best we can. Then the government being unreasonable, we inform our members as whatever we have to do to make them become more reasonable. But I believe a good partnership speaks to the way forward for trade union movement in the Bahamas.
Mr. Pinder, I know that you're again vying to head the BPSU again, right? But you mentioned that the union itself is in financial straits, and that member that even though you have a large union, no, that was a bad wording. That even though there are a number of persons eligible to join the union, the actual persons who have joined and committed and paying dues are at an all time low or is low. What will you be doing to increase that? Why is that happening? Why aren't the persons interested in joining the union in general?
So for the most part, that's what we're doing now. We're really doing a membership drive, which will end by Friday, because persons who wish to participate in the next union election has to be financial by the end of June for 3 months. So they have to pay April. Those who have not joined got to go pay for April, and then they get their salary reduction for May and June in order for them to be able eligible to vote. So what really happens is this. I didn't forget what you had asked me.
Why people aren't joining the union?
And how are you going to drive membership? Yeah.
A number of persons that dropped out of the union because they didn't like the representation. We lost members. It was because they wanted to form. They thought I was looking after too many different tasks. For example, customs and immigration break the way under my leadership and the nurses. And that's because throughout the Caribbean, they had their own nurses union. And they had their own custom immigration union. So these fellas decided that they would form their own union.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's fine. I am not a union-busting person. I understood that. I fight as hard as I could to keep them, but they decided they would break away and form their own, which they find out didn't work in their favor.
So
a number of persons were not satisfied, or still is not satisfied with some of the representation they're getting from the union. That has been the cry throughout this whole campaign of trying to get back. They just don't like the representation they're receiving. They feel as though the present administration of the Bahamas Public Service Union is not negotiating on their behalf. They're just accepting whatever is pushed down to them without negotiating. For example, what they're getting right now are just increments that were really due to the members. And I said on another show that the Minister for the Public Service, State for Public Service, Mrs. Pia Glover-Rowe, I think she's doing a relatively good job. She acts more like a president of the union than the president of the union, to be honest with you. You know, I feel her passion, and I really like what she's trying to do. But the president of the union needs to step up his game. He cannot allow the employer to give him an industrial agreement. He's supposed to present them with a proposal, then you can have a counter proposal, then you go to them and you negotiate it.
I hear you with that, and I know that Mr. Ferguson was concerned about that. It seems as if the government is giving them a plan to sign, and that's what they do. They sign it. There's no negotiation involved. How did the union deteriorate to this point where they just accept whatever the government, and in fact have a standing order agreement that they will work with the government instead of negotiate?
Let the union satisfy what they're receiving from the employer. That can never happen. And the way to ensure that your members are satisfied to have a membership meeting and present whatever the government is presenting and see if your members is totally prepared to accept it. And if they're not, you got to go back to the damn negotiation about your membership.
Absolutely.
You know, it's all about negotiation. That's why I think gone are days when you have these general strikes to create unnecessary unrest. If you can negotiate with the government or the employer to get what you're looking for, sometimes you might ask for the sky, but if you land on the clouds, you're satisfied with that. Mm-hmm. And your membership satisfied with that.
Listen,
you can't just sit there and not make an attempt to get anything for your membership.
Mr. Pinder, we are almost out of time, so I can throw two questions that you may not be able to answer now, but I can have you back on to answer, please. Why doesn't the BPSU then shift its infrastructure to a trade congress format if you have so many sectors that you have to represent? And what has been the real impact of the MOU signed in opposition, when the PLP was in opposition? What's been the real effect of that on the labor movement, you know, pushing forward from 2021?
Good, big question. I might have to bring you back for that.
I support the Power Public Service Union not really signing at that point, because you don't want your members to think you're in bed with the government.
I got you.
At that time, you don't want to do that. So I agree with them that they didn't sign. I agree that they didn't. Should not have signed. I agree with that.
Okay.
Let's talk about that next week. Let's book a date.
I could bring some team members there, introduce them to the general public and to yourself.
I hope they could take the heavy questions like you, sir, because you took them well.
I have a cadre of professionals, man, who've been around the public. They know how to single. Yes, ma'am, they can.
Thank you.
This has been Guiding Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron Green. Thank you very much,
Thank
John Pinder. Next week. We can try to work something out next week. Have a wonderful day.